This is W2TTT. Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, with Bergen Amateur Radio Association. That meets weekly on the frequency 146.955. The Alpine repeater operated by Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. PL for this repeater is 141.3. Tone is 141.3. And it uses a minus 600 offset. Is there any emergency or prairie traffic? Please call K2BAR. Okay, well, this net is organized to carry on technical discussions. Technical discussions in amateur radio, or things related to amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, sciences that support those technologies, and of course, things that we use to apply technology as well. So public service events, or just fun operating things we do. So we'll talk about that as well. What's really cool about this time of year, of course, is that we're all starting to think about being outside more. Barra's already had one outdoor day where we had a bunch of guys operating from a park with small QRP or in some cases larger radio, but all on battery power, so that was kind of cool. Of course, in a week from this weekend, we have the VHF contest, and then 2 weeks after that, we have Field Day. So, you know, hope springs eternal with outdoor activities. And of course, then there's just opportunity to take your radio outside if you want to anyway. Kind of cool as well. So, with no further hesitation or ado, let's talk about how we sign in. Use our call sign, indicate whether we have a question, comment, both, you can have us, or none of the above. Now, it might seem strange if you don't have anything to add, i.e., no question, no comment. But, you know, why would we want you to check in? Well, we want you to check in because, frankly, your presence has value to the net and helps on you to answer a question or give your opinion on something. All right. So, in order to make this somewhat orderly, call sign group 2. What we'll do is we'll look for call signs beginning with the letter Whiskey. Please call K2BAR.
This is W2JEK. Don, no questions or comments, but are you running low power, Gordon? I think you could be hitting the repeater a little harder than you usually do. You don't seem as loud as you usually are, that's why.
This is 2JC, Jim, none of the above, over.
Okay, I just turned up the mic gain, is this a bit better?
Okay.
Yeah, Don, is this better?
Yeah, much better, much better.
Yeah, I just brought it up about one click. Okay, very good. And I'm probably speaking quietly. And Jim, I got you. Just want to know, Don, do you have questions or comments for the net?
Comment.
Received, I got your comment. All right, any other whiskeys?
WE2R, Charlie, no questions or comments.
Okay, Charlie, very good. Good evening to you as well. Any other whiskeys?
W1AU, Bill, none of you above.
Okay, Bill, very fine. Good evening to you. Any other whiskeys? Okay. All right, let's move on to the alpha calls. Any stations whose call signs begin with the letter A? Please call K2BAR. There's somebody who's keying up, but they're not holding a repeater. I don't think they're running tone. You need to be running a 141.3 tone, a 141.3 tone, in order to access this repeater. So we'll try that. We do, by the way, have an exercise tonight, so if you don't know how to program your radio, this may be a good time to think about how. We're going to do that. We're going to play a little game today. Alrighty. Any Kilo 2s?
K2BAR. This is K2ZO. I have one question and also one comment. Back to Ned.
Excellent. Good to hear you, Jim. You've been kind of missing the last couple of weeks. And I know one of them, I think, was your wife's birthday or anniversary or something. I think something else had to do with a grandchild along the way. I think that was it, or a daughter. I can't remember. But anyway, it's good to hear you back. Any other Kilo 2s? Okie dokie. Any other Kilos?
KB2JLL Mobile. No questions or comments at this time.
Hi, Peter. Welcome back. I trust your visit to Rutherford was fruitful. Anyway, very good. Any other Kilos?
KC2LLW, Steve, no questions or comments.
Questions or comments, but I am here with my 3-year-old boy listening in for about the third time on the testnet.
Got two of you, well, for the price of one. KC2LLL, Lima Lima Whiskey, Steve, no questions or comments. Who was the other station with their son?
KC2Z Romeo Golf. The name here is Rick, and I have no questions or comments, but I am listening in with my son. Again, it's about the third time he's listened in on the tech set. Back to you.
Rick, very good. I'm glad you and your son are both here. That's excellent. Yeah, it's a slow burn to get them to be hams, but I eventually got all mine to be licensed. I think James would be on the air tonight, except for the fact he had a meeting to go to. Alrighty, any other Kilos?
This is K9GPM. No questions. No comments.
Good evening, Sean. Alrighty. Good to hear you. Any other Kilos? Okay, how about November stations?
This is N2OEL. One question.
Good evening, Noel. No problem. Got your question registered. Any other stations with a November call?
This is November Bravo 2 Foxtrot D. None of the above.
Good evening, D. Welcome aboard. Any other Novembers? I got a good long list here. That's excellent. We got a bunch of questions, a bunch of comments. We have a little exercise we're going to play with. Make sure you know how to QSY your radio and program the tone. And we'll play that game in a little while. So, let's see. Any other stations? Any call sign?
Charlie X-Ray, number 6. Charlie Alpha Hotel.
Something Charlie something Hotel. Station with Charlie and Hotel again.
Charlie X-Ray, number 6. Charlie Alpha Hotel.
Alright, is it Charlie Yankee 6, Charlie Alpha Hotel?
Charlie X-Ray.
X-Ray, okay. Charlie X-Ray 6, Charlie Alpha Hotel. Would that be Chile?
No, that is Uruguay.
It's Uruguay. Very good. And what is your name, sir? I got November Echo something Tango something something.
again. This November, Echo, Sierra, Tango, Oscar, Romeo.
Okay, Nestor. November, Echo, Sierra, Tango, Alpha, Romeo, right?
No, it's no Alpha, it's Oscar. O is an ocean.
Oscar, okay. Oscar, okay. Nestor. Well, very good, Nestor. You're very, very intermittent to the repeater. Where are you located and what are you using?
I am mobile. I have 5-8 antenna, the mobile station. I'm operating a Jaesu FT2200 with 50 watts. I am in Atlantic County, New Jersey.
Did you say you're in Manalapan, New Jersey? Someone else get that?
He said Atlantic Highlands.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I need to put cans on. All right. Very good, Nestor. Welcome from Atlantic Highlands. You probably need to move because from Atlantic Highlands, there are places where you should be able to get into this repeater very easily without any trouble. And you're really, really weak, especially with a 50-watt radio and a mobile antenna. But very good. Welcome aboard, and greetings from the United States to your homeland of Uruguay. That's pretty cool. Alrighty, let's get on with the questions. Unless there are no, well, unless they're not listening. One more time, anybody else checking into the net, please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, KT2ORX. Good evening, Gordon.
Okie doke. Hello, Robert. I've added you to the list. So, very good. Anybody else? Okie dokie. All right, well, let's get on with it then. Don, you had a comment. W2JEK, K2BAR.
Hi, K2BAR, and then this is W2JEK. Good evening, everybody. And just remind everybody that our next DE test session will be on the 17th of June this month. Friday night, 7 p.m. at the high school. And this is the last one we'll be running before the general class question pool changes. As of July 1st, there will be a new general class series of tests and question pool that go with it. So if you've been studying, get into the test session or one of the others that's around. I know there are a few others in the area within the 25 miles of our area here, so otherwise you have to stick it up and study all over again. So that's about all I have right now, and hope everybody that is studying comes out to our test session. Back to net, W2JK.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Don. Any other comments from last weekend's test session at the Hamfest?
No, we had 11 applicants. We came out with one tech. I think it was four generals and five extras. I think that's the way it worked for it. Yeah, one tech, four generals, and five extras. That was the result.
Yeah, not bad. Very good. Alrighty. Well, James is putting nose to grindstone trying to get it together for the 17th. So hopefully he'll pass by then. All right, very good. Anybody have questions for Don? All righty. Then let's move this along. Our next comment and question is K2ZO, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. And we'll say good evening to the DX station. I guess he's having lots of fun getting on the local repeaters because it's very unusual that they hear a call sign like that. So it must be fun. So I hope he's having a good time here from Uruguay.
That's really good. A comment I had was, you know, we talked about the off-center fed antenna. Dropped a bit, and I did say we were going to test it out, and one of the things that we did with the operation in the park was we used the off-center fed antenna that I made, and it's a 40-meter one. It's fed at 22.5 feet. It's 6 feet long. It's fed at 22 feet on one end, and, of course, the other end is 45 feet, so a total of 66. Close to that, anyway. Anyway, we fed it with 66-foot, one-half wavelength of 300-ohm open wire, and we used the W2AU balun, just a one-to-one balun at the input. And we were able to match that using just the simple antenna tuner in the radio, even on bands like 17 meters and stuff like that, where it's really not supposed to work, and yet it worked fine. So anyway, it's a good antenna to have in your bag of tricks and throw it up. Stick in a tree and off you go.
Well, that's marvelous. That's absolutely marvelous. So did anybody else get to see that at the time, and anybody have any questions for Jim about the off-center fed antenna?
Okay.
Dongo?
And Jim, what you, it was, it, you said 300 ohm twin lead. Is that just ordinary TV twin lead, or do you have something special?
I had the good stuff, Don. I bought it from the wire man. It's, you know, it's got the window in it, and it's transmitting twin lead. So it would take, this stuff would take quite a bit of power. And, of course, the whole idea was to come up with an antenna that somebody could take out with an ICOM 706 or a Kenwood 480 or something like that, and with the built-in antenna tuner, match it. You know, some of these other antennas will work, but they've got some weird impedances when you start getting off their resonant frequency. You know, like long wires and center-fed dipoles and stuff like that. But the off-center feeds it at a point where the impedance doesn't get too far out of control. And a simple one-to-one balun, we were able to match it no problem with the, you know, the limited antenna tuner in some of these radios that only goes to 3-to-1.
Very good, W2JK. Thank you.
WTC, comment.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks for the information there. Another advantage to that seems to me, a lot of people have lots where their house is, where their house is toward the front of the lot, and the lot goes way to the back, and this way the feed line can drop down close to the house instead of having to run half the backyard. Cover?
Jim, you want to pick it up?
Yeah, that's very true, Jim, that it does it. But the whole idea, it's still a half-wave dipole. But the thing is that if you take a half-wave dipole, feed it in the center, and then feed it on a harmonic, its impedance is so way out, and the SWR is so high, that the tuner is just not making it. So, of course, by off-center feeding it, you put it at a point where the impedance is not that bad each time you change it octavely, and even in between on the warp bands it was not bad. But you're right, there's lots of applications where if you had it center fed, you'd be way out in the middle, and it might be a little bit awkward, where here the off center fed worked fine. And with the open wire lossless line, we didn't care, you know, if we did have any SWR on there, and we were able to transform whatever we had down to a reasonable match. Back to that, K2ZO.
Another question?
Go ahead, Don.
Jim, you mentioned that it was a 66-foot length of line. Is that that 300-ohm line? What would happen if we used a shorter length?
I don't know. I didn't have the I didn't have the guts to cut it up and check it. Of course, we might be able to use some of the other programs. I happen figure out, though, that the 66 foot times the 0.91, which is the velocity factor, would give you, would repeat the impedance up at the antenna down below. For example, with the 40 meter, one half wavelength repeated whatever the impedance was up at the top, which is about 200 or 300 ohms. And the same thing on 20 and some of the other bands that were harmonically related. And that way I knew that we would have no trouble tuning it. And I was right, because we even were able to tune it on bands that, you know, we're not supposed to be able to, and yet with a simple tuner, we were able to make that work. And we didn't care about any loss because basically there was a lossless feed line.
Thanks, Jim. W2JK.
So, Jim, let's just review the dimensions. 66 feet, is that split in the center? No, it's not split. It's split 66 on one side, what, 30-some-odd on the other, 66 feet of twin of 300 ohm open wire twin lead ladder, you know, window line through a one-to-one balun, balanced, unbalanced, and then a short run of coax to the radio to its tuner. So why don't we go over the dimensions just so people can write that down?
Okay. Actually cut it for the full lower end of the band, but it seemed to work fine on the upper end of the band too.
Okay, so the two flat top pieces are how long?
Line on one side, 22 and a half feet on the other. And if you look at what that gives you, you're right at the at a impedance point of about 250 or so ohms. On 20, on 10, and on 15, although it would be high there, because of the relationship of the feed line, it actually transformed it down lower. And we also tuned it up on 17, where I know it was a rather high SWR, but it worked fine, because the line is so light, and the antenna is so light, the way it's constructed, you can just toss it right up there and pull it up. And so it actually tuned up. I tuned it up on 160 with about a 2.5 to 1 SWR, which amazed me. And, of course, I even tuned it up on 80 meters, and it works on 80 meters, not as well as a full 80-meter dipole, but we weighed contacts 300 or 400 miles away. And, of course, on 40, it was dynamite, as well as on 20. We worked Europe, no problem at all. One call. Back to that.
Okay, I tripped over a little bit. So the short piece on the top is 22. The long piece is the question mark. The ladder line is 66, and how long is the coax?
No coax. We came all the way back with the ladder line, the 66-foot of thing, and we came right to a balun. And then right to the radio. Well, maybe we had a couple of inches of coax, or about a couple of feet of coax, and that was it.
Okay, and the long piece of the flat wire?
45 feet. 22.5 on one side, 45 feet on the other, and I had 66 feet of feed line.
Marvelous. So 22 and a half, 45, 66, a one-to-one balun, and you're good to go. Excellent. Okay. That's a great thing to know. And blows up on 80 just fine, too?
Surprisingly, it did. Now, one of the other tricks that you could do, depending on what the impedance is down at the feed line, and I didn't get a chance to check it because it works so well with a simple one-to-one balun. I brought a four-to-one balun with me also. So you could actually have a situation where again, you might have a problem with the antenna tuner in the radio because they're kind of limited, and you could solve it by swapping balance.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. 4-to-1 will definitely bring it within operational range if you're a little outside the game plan. That's excellent. That's really cool. Very, very nice. So the other thing you can do is on the end of the ladder line, you can actually put big, huge honking alligator clips. That way you can just clip it onto the balun you're using.
I used a pair of those little burndy things that the electricians use and hooked it onto the balun that way. because the Ballon was open. And then it goes. And the other item I have is a little question about building a battery charger.
Oh, boy. All right. Any more on the antennas before we move to battery chargers?
Nestor, okay.
Good evening, Jim. Are you checking in?
Sure, and I have a question on the subject.
Okay, on the subject of antennas or chargers?
Antennas.
Okay, let's just make sure. I'll put you in here. Anybody else have anything more on Jim's antenna before we move to Jim's question about antennas? Okay, NS2K, it's all yours, K2BAR.
Actually, a simple little question. On this antenna that Jim built, the 22.5/45 on the other side, you short the ends, so it makes a flat loop, as it were.
Mr. Zeno.
I'm just sitting here saying, Jim, when you say you short the end, are you talking about like bending them down or something?
Oh, I thought you were using ladder line for the horizontals as well.
Oh, no, the horizontal portion was 22.5 feet and 45 feet. Now, there are other dimensions that people have used with different style and put balance up there and stuff like that. But I chose that length because it's approximately 250 ohms, and I had some 300-ohm twin lead. And, of course, the idea was with the 66 feet to repeat the impedance down at the bottom of the antenna. But I thought your question was, were you bending it back onto a loop? I don't know. I would assume it would probably work like a dipole works when you bend it back, make right angles at the end or something.
No, actually, my question, I thought where you were using, twin lead for the other elements, not just the feed line, at which point you could, make a folded dipole, I guess, something of that nature. I'm not sure what you'd really call it, but you could make a shortened antenna that way.
Well, there's a version of this called the T2FD that uses an open wire line as a folded dipole, and its bed, it could actually be fed off center, and then on the center of it, on the other side, you actually put a resistor, and it ends up being a very broadband antenna. The military uses something like that, and Barker & Williams actually makes one like that. An interesting antenna, but you do throw some of your power away. But it does work.
Yeah, very good. Anyway, let me back out here for a little bit. NS2K.
Yeah, very good. Do I hear Don one name making a comment?
Yeah, you mentioned something like that. What Jim was talking about. They do have in the Editors and Engineers book that was edited by Bill Orr years ago. They had a folded dipole, a 40-meter folded dipole fed by 66 feet of ladder line in the center pad, a folded dipole. And on the 40-meter band, of course, the 66 feet matched up with the 300 ohms on the 40-meter dipole. However, that 66 feet was then a quarter wave at 80 meters. And what was happening is on 80 meters, you would have, I believe, the ends of the dipole up in the air would be a high impedance. And that would, 66 feet, would transform it down to a lower impedance, like, say, close to 300 ohms. So you could have a dual-band antenna. I remember reading that in the Editors and Engineers book years ago. So that's another trick along the way there. a lot of varieties of dipoles. Back to that W2JK.
Yeah, it's one thing lovely about a dipole. If you don't like the way it's built, build another one. It'll work differently. dear me. All right, very good. Any more on this subject from anybody? All right, I'd like to make a...
Bergen County Bike Ride, and we'll be meeting at Bergen Community College in their massive parking lot right in the center on the inside edge. Around 7 a.m., we could use some SAG operators. Could also use some operators who might be available to babysit intersections and such like that, or cruise up and down the course. So if there's any interest in that, please let me know at w2ttt@att.net. And you also can come on Sunday morning, dress for the weather, try to wear something orange if you can. If you have a lime safety vest with preferably orange, but any accents is good. If you have a New York City Marathon orange hat, that's great. And the like. So we hope that you can join us. We could always use a few extra operators. This is the tune-up for the, I believe, August 14th, which is a Sunday event as well, the Round of Hill Rally, which is all-day event. This is a Sunday morning event this week, Sunday morning only. It's kind of like a team tune-up for making sure that we have our processes all squared up, and that we should be in good shape. Alrighty, with that in mind, we can take interest in that after a couple of more questions. So our next question, I think, well, actually, Jim, are you done? K2ZO, K2BAR.
I had a question about battery charging.
That's right, I'm sorry, yeah. And I sense that Noel probably does too. But you never know with Noel. Noel's questions are interesting as well. All right, your question about battery charging, Jim, K2BAR.
I have some, they're kind of replacements for this, the 123 series 3-volt batteries. Flashlight uses two of them. And they're lithium-ion batteries. I have a holder that'll hold two of them if I want to charge them, but I don't have a charger that I, most of the chargers I have are designed for nickel, cadmium, and stuff like that. Question is, lithium-ion batteries, are they a constant current or a constant voltage? You know, like the difference between lead-acid batteries and NiCads. I don't know how you treat these things.
It depends on which lithium technology is in play. That's a really good question. I honestly don't know. If you have a battery number, we could probably look it up and then see what some of the manufacturers suggest in the way of, or distributors suggest in the way of a charger, and then kind of go from there. We can derive some answers from that.
Well, to give you an idea, okay, these things are described as IMR, don't know what that means, is 16340, and then it says RCR 123, okay, so they are replacements for 123 series batteries. And then it's, and of course they're described as lithium manganese nickel, which, as we commonly know, are lithium ion batteries. They're 3.7 volts, 600 milliamp. My question is, I have a couple of chargers that are constant current kind, I have another one that's constant voltage, and of course they're adjustable. So my question is, do I just put 3.7 volts on this sucker and just leave it? Or do I set it up and monitor the current and use a series limiting resistor or something like you would do with an ICAT? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm checking right now. Because I'm not sure either. They're 3.1 volts?
They're 3.7 volts, which tells me that there are probably two cells in there. Is that right? To my knowledge, lithium-ion won't give you 3.7 volts. It's somewhere more like 1.3 or something.
Okay, I just used Bing and checked lithium-ion 3.7V charger, and I got all sorts of good answers here. some are batteries and some are chargers themselves. Let's see. From these descriptions, we can figure out what they are. That's half the battle. I'm not seeing that answer quite yet. Whatever they are, they're not expensive. I see a charger here for $14. That sounds about my speed for this adventure. I just seem to recall that if you screw this up, that you end up with an explosion. That's kind of why I'm being tentative here and not giving you a definitive answer.
Yeah, well, what happened was I did buy one of these $14 things from China. That's why I still have the holder. And I plugged it in the wall, and it had some chips in there and had a few other things. It was very difficult to see what was there because nothing was really marked. And it was supposed to charge two of these things. Well, I plugged it in, and I went downstairs, and my wife called me at the basement door, and she said, come on up here, there's a funny smell. Well, guess what? It melted.
Yeah, well, that's better than my nickel metal hydride story, where they exploded.
Oh, I've seen some high-tech batteries do things like that, thionyl chloride and stuff like that, which are like little bombs.
There's a three-quarter-inch deep hole through my plasterboard. And the only reason why it didn't go all the way through is because it basically it didn't blow out. It bulged out into the wall. But I had the good sense to put it behind a heavy piece of steel equipment, so the blast went up and into the wall, up into the air and into the wall. But I'll tell you, startled the hell out of me, and threw black soot everywhere. So, yeah, you know, I've got some 12 volt chargers. You remember those blue batteries I brought to a Barra meeting? They turned out not to be exactly what I wanted, but they're actually adequate to run an ICOM 703. They're not what they're cracked up to be as far as their 12 volt rating, but you know, something that's voltage tolerant like a 703, 703 plus. It's just an outstanding little battery, and you know, I got a little half size bricks of these things that sum up to 12 volts, but every several sections of this thing has its own, it's got its basic own intelligent charger, and it's got a cable to discharge on and a cable to charge on. To answer your question, I think they are constant current, and you have to know when to turn it off when it hits a certain voltage level.
Comment.
Go ahead, Jim.
Some of these, and I'm not sure, well, obviously I don't know if this is one of them, I'm still in the car here, you charge them at a constant current rate, and then I think the voltage will go up, 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 and then it will start down again, and I think that is, at least on certain types of cells, the indication that you are at the end.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you should mention that, but Noel mentioned that a week or so ago. Noel?
Remember how our smart chargers work. The nickel metal hydride, they set when the current drops or the voltage drops. We went back and forth with that by email to QOL.
Yeah. I'm trying something else here. I'm trying C123 type battery charger. See if I can find something on a search that way. Gee, that seems to work pretty well. Are your batteries little flat pack batteries?
No, they're the same. The ones that are used in cameras, and also they're used in you know, of course, the flashlights. You know, the Surefire, the high intensity flashlights use two of them, and they're, you know, three, nominal 3 volts, and they're lithium, and they're not rechargeable. Well, these are replacements for those that are rechargeable, and they're 800 milliamp hour batteries. They're pretty neat. And this little $12 charger burned up. So I still have the clip, you know, that holds the two batteries, and I was just trying to wire that up and use it with some other chargers that I have here, or else just with a variable power supply or whatever. But, you know, these batteries are expensive, and I didn't want to fry them.
No, clearly not. But they're C123 types, right? So I think Jim and Noel kind of hit the gold mine on what to look for. But boy, I have actually a couple of those flashlights, and their charger is built into the flashlight.
I do that on some of them, and they've got a chip in there. But I don't know what this chip senses. In some of these things, they sense a drop in voltage. In other words, it goes up and up and up, and it peaks, and then if it doesn't get down any further, it shuts off. Others, you know, when the temperature starts to go up, it's well charged, and then it turns off. But this little $1.98 whatever charger with a chip in here that I can't identify, and wiring that doesn't make sense to me, had a, you know, a little switching AC power supply come in the AC, and then it went over to this chip, and then it went over to the battery, and unfortunately it burned up. But I have no idea how these things work. I didn't know if they worked off constant current, constant voltage, or whatever. I don't know that much about lithium ion.
Okay, I just found a website, greenbatteries.com, and they have the CR123A rechargeable lithium-ion battery that is compatible with many devices that use CR123 type A batteries, not for use in flashlights, apparently. That's what this says, anyway. So, now I'm going to look for the charger. I think we'll be in good shape.
I wouldn't say not for use in a flashlight if it's a CR123.
I don't know. That's that particular battery, but I found the chargers for them.
Yeah, because it's going to burn up.
Yeah, exactly. This thing has lithium-ion battery chargers for digital camera batteries, and CR123s, CRV3s, CR2s, 2CR5s, and also, you know, handle AA's and AAA's. They give you a plate for both of them. I'm going to send you a URL, and you can take a look at this. I think this is what you were looking for.
Okay, I'll take a look at it and see if I can come up with a way. Right now, I just figure I'd set this thing at 3.7 volts and just not leave the batteries on there all night long.
I would also put it behind something that will protect you.
Yeah, in case it becomes a bomb.
Yeah, you don't want to lose body parts or your sight or something, or maybe even your hearing. All right, anyway, so I'm sending you this. Is there anybody else who would like to have this? Well, be that way. All righty. Well, I'm sending it to you as we speak. It's actually a list of, anyway. Let's see. All right. I guess, any more on the subject of this charger from anybody? Okie doke. Well, our next questioner is Mr. N2 OEL, Mr. Noel. Go ahead, Noel. Welcome aboard, and I'd love to hear your question. K2BAR.
Well, actually, it's a two-part question. So the first part is easy. What a J-pole is. We know the theory that J-poles could be three-quarter of a wavelength high. Suppose I wanted to do a vertical 20-meter antenna, which means that if I do it a quarter wave with a ground system, it's going to be 15, 16 feet high, something like that. Now, if I happen to have a tree that's 60 feet high, could I take 450-ohm twin leads and make a J-pole? It would have to be approximately 45 feet high, bend it a little bit off the ground, a couple feet. Would that be doable?
I'm not getting it. You want a J-pole a couple of feet off the ground?
But you probably wouldn't want it to touch. And if the antenna is going to be 48 feet long, if it's a J-pole, and you only have 55, 60 feet, the base of the antenna is only going to be, what, 5, 10 feet off the ground, maybe. But would that be a usable antenna if you made it out of 450-ohm twin lead?
Oh, and put it horizontally?
No, it'd be fed vertically. It's a vertical J-pole.
Yeah, it'd be fine. That would work fine. I mean, in fact, there are people who've turned J-poles on their side in order to, you know, get a compromised antenna. It's somewhat directional off the sides, but it works pretty well as well. So, sure, you could do that. You want to build one for HF or something?
Yeah, 20 meters.
Sounds perfect. Yeah, it'd be easy. 30-odd feet long. It'd be just fine. It'll work to beat the band. I know guys who've had J-poles on 10 meters and 15 meters, so why not 20? Well, let me add something else. There is no reason why you couldn't build it out of aluminum and mount it, you know, 10 feet off the ground or whatever, and make it so that you can make it so that it's all nice and DC ground, so that way you don't have any static buildup. And, you know, it's got a reasonably low angle of radiation, so, you know, I guess the only thing I would suggest is that because of that, you might want to get it above the ground clutter and hope that your ground clutter is not too high. Not just for mechanical reasons, but also for performance reasons. It's a pain in the neck to have to, deal with a low radiation angle antenna and have it, you know, shoving RF into buildings and trees and stuff like that. So if you have a low angle antenna, such as a J-pole, you really want to you don't want to get up in the air so that it's clear of all the ground clutter. That's great.
Okay, part two of the question.
We're waiting.
The vertical antenna set against the ground plane is. And if you could do the same thing if you wanted to feed a half-wave antenna, a dipole on end, so to speak, that would be also working very nicely. What would happen if you took that dipole antenna, had a ground plane there, and moved the dipole down so that the, let's say the 20-meter antenna. You have one leg of the dipole normal 16 feet up, and the other leg 5 feet, and it touches the ground plane, is connected to the ground plane. So I think that would be an elevated speed vertical of some sort. Would that work, or would that be, it would be one heck of an asymmetrical antenna?
Yeah, I think it would work just fine. Anybody have any comments on this or the most previous question?
We do just set up.
Don first, and then Jim.
Okay, I was just reading in the recent QST about a fellow who used a piece of
tubing, I think it was an 18-foot length of aluminum tubing for a 30-meter antenna. And what he did is he had two, I think it was mounted on a 13-foot pole, and he had two radio wires pointing towards Europe from that. And he tuned the whole thing just by the radio wires. And he has that on 30 meters. Now, I guess you could do the same thing with 20-meter antenna. But you mentioned one thing, Noel, that you're talking 40 feet. 40 feet is about a 5/8 wave on 20 meters. If you had a 5/8 wave vertical on 20 meters that worked against ground where you need a radial system in the ground, then you could do the same like your 5/8 wave 2-meter antenna. It gives you 3 dB gain over a regular ground plane. That's a possibility for you to think about, too. But, yeah, the JPO, I think, would work fine. And having a single radio wire as a ground plane, that was described in some of the ARRL handbooks for quite a while. They fed the thing with open wire line, either as a 16-foot vertical with a 16-foot radial or a single or a 30-foot vertical with a 30-foot radial. And it blows up, and it will work. Maybe not as good as something else, but it might solve your problems or whatever you have. Back to that, W2JEK.
Okay, very good. Jim?
Okay, this is K2ZO. Getting back to the question that Noel had about the J-pole, you have to look at what a J-pole is. J-pole is a half-wave antenna fed with a quarter-wave section that is tapped at the 50-ohm point. If you make it all vertical, you have a quarter-wave length of antenna that you're really just using as a matching section. It doesn't really have to be vertical. It could be horizontal. If you want to look at the commercial adaptation of that, remember the Ringo Ranger, which is a half wavelength fed antenna. They guess they built them up to 10 meters, and they used a loop at the bottom and tapped it. Now, if you want to do that type of antenna, there's another solution that Steve WY2W did, where you're feeding an end-fed antenna with a transformer, and he had a 9-to-1 transformer. And we also use that at the park, and it worked quite well.
Outstanding. Yeah. Well, I would agree. Using that as a vertical or horizontal antenna is pretty cool. Alrighty. Anybody else have comments for Noel's questions? Noel, back to you.
Go to sleep. Got up at 5 this morning to go to New York City to go to the audiologist, get my hearing aids tuned up. At least I'm ready for Sideman. Back to that. This is N2 Oil.
Okay, very good. By the way, in the current Barra Bulletin, there is a link to K9 TLN's website or antenna website from the Dayton Invention. You have to, you know, sort through it and get to the K9 TLN page. But he has a stack, or he had a stack of 6 four-element steppers, I think they are. Antenna system cost him $168,000, and he died within a year after he put it up. But I'll tell you, the slideshow is very impressive. I've seen pictures of this thing, but not as many detailed pictures, and also showing the evolution of it all. This is very, very cool. Phil Barber caught this and threw it into the mix of the variable. Alrighty. Anybody else have comments for Noel? Alrighty. Any other questions, comments, confusions for the net?
W2JDK.
Mr. Don.
The question for Jim. They brought some orange batteries over to the park that day. I was just wondering what kind of batteries those were.
Okay, this is K2ZO. Do I have it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, those are sealed lead acid batteries, Don. They're called AGM, Advanced Glass Mat, and that refers to the separation material between the plates and the way they're constructed. Apparently, AGM-type batteries are highly preferred these days. I was given them as a gift. I could never afford them because they're over $150 a piece. And I was given four of them, and one of them didn't make it. I was told that one was bad, and it certainly was. I could never bring it back up. But I do have a battery keeper here, the type thing that's designed for lead-acid batteries. And I've fooled around with those things, and they're so well matched that I can run them in parallel, keep them in parallel, and they don't run each other down. So they're all in good shape. And with 40 amps out of each one of them, I can run the Kenwood here, the 200-watt Kenwood, pretty much all afternoon, and not have any problem with them. They're really neat batteries, so I was very fortunate to get them for free.
What's the model and the manufacturer?
Boy, they're downstairs. I don't remember right now. I'll have to dig it out and send you an email.
If you would, that'd be lovely. Because, yeah, those things are pretty cool. Are those cylindrical batteries that, you know, where each of the six cells is cylindrical and they're kind of then put into a frame that's nominally rectangular?
Oh, no, these are rectangular all the way. I know the type you're talking about. No, and they're not built with that type of construction. Apparently, these AGM batteries, the Advanced Glass Mat, are all rectangular, at least all of the ones that I've seen.
Okay, so they're a planar kind of battery. Good. All right. Yeah, I'd love to see the model number off that and manufacturer. I'll take a look at it. That'd be pretty cool. All righty. I am yawning, but I'm not particularly tired. I don't think I ate enough or whatever. But anyway, I went a good chunk of the day without eating anything. I ate breakfast, I ate dinner, and just before the net, and they were all of, you know, 9 hours, 12 hours apart with nothing in between. I just went, it was like work. Kind of a busy day today. Anyway, but good. A good day. So, anything else for people on the net? Okay, what I'd like to try is a simple demonstration. And that is, one of the things that we tend to get stale on, and if you remember when we first started this net several years ago, we would try different modes, and sometimes we'd try QSYing and things like that, so even on FM. So what I'd like to do tonight is see how many people can dial up 146.835 with a minus 600 split. You don't have to worry about the tone because there is no tone. It says 151, but you don't have to use it. In fact, it's totally unnecessary to use it. But I'm just kind of curious as to how many of us can QSY there, take a roll call, and then we'll come back here, take another roll call, see if we can get back and forth. And we'll see how it works. Everybody ready? Now let's try it this way. Is anyone not ready? Okay, the frequency is 146.835. Let's try that, and then we'll come back here. This is K2BAR, QSY, 146.835. Copied over on the other repeater were W2JEK, W2JC, WE2R, W1AW, AU, pardon me, W1AU, probably happens to a lot, Bill, sorry, KC2LLW, NB2F,
W2 stroke CX6 CAH, Nestor, W2CH Ray, and of course yours truly, W2TTT. Did I miss anybody? Okay, well, that's pretty good. I'm just curious of something. W2 stroke CX6 CAH, Nestor, do you want to try it again here?
Yes, I move my location. That's why you can hear me more clear now. Over.
Oh my God, you're full quieting. Yeah, it's marvelous. Okay, very good. I just wanted to make sure that you had managed to straighten that out. That's great. Great, great, great. All right, well, that was pretty cool. One of the reasons why we do this, by the way, is because there are people who don't know how to QSY their radios. And so we want to make sure that they know how or they get motivated to learn. So that there we go. Very good. Well, let's see. Again, Sunday is the bike ride, Bergen Community College, 7 a.m. The uniform of the day is lime green, reflective stuff, and orange, whatever. HDs, mobiles, whatever you have. Frequencies will be 955 and 835, by the way. And very good. By the way, just in full disclosure, we'll do a different repeater next time. But the 146.835 repeater, I'm the trustee of that repeater, and it's, what do you call it, NJ2BS, or New Jersey 2 Boy Scouts. The irony is it's in Pearl River, New York, but anyway. Alrighty, oh, very good. Anybody else have anything else for the net? Okay, thank you, everybody. Have a great night, and thank you for sharing an hour or so with each other and with yours truly. I appreciate it. It was an interesting net. You always learn something. So this is W2TTT for K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo, the voice of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, thanking the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of the repeater and looking forward to seeing some of you on Sunday night at the Barra meeting, which, by the way, will be at the Washington Township Municipal Building. We gather at 7. It's Washington Township in Bergen County, by the way. And the meeting starts a little after 7:30. And look forward to seeing everybody. And enjoy. This is K2BAR W2TTT Claire.
W2JC, I have to confess that QSY was too easy because I already had it programmed in my ICOM here. I just turned the dial a few notches and bingo.
Yeah, but that's okay, Jim, because it's one of the frequencies that that Ron and Bob have been asking people to program into their radios as part of the Racy's OEM radio function. So it's a good thing. And on the other hand, for those who know how to crank the dial, that's good too. Yeah, there is no PL on this repeater, or on that repeater, I should say. There is on this one. And amazingly enough, it doesn't suffer interference, and so therefore it's going to stay that way.
Yeah, well, unless there's another repeater in the area that comes through, the PL is sort of superfluous.
Well, I can tell you there are repeaters that use PL but don't transmit it, and in some cases that's annoying, especially if, pardon me, there are noisy frequencies. 220.436 comes to mind. Oh my God, you're always driving by something that's going burp, chirp, and squeal in the night, but the damn repeater doesn't use PL, therefore you listen to all that stuff.
True. I know on the public service scanner, I've used reverse PL. I had Psyops at Long Island coming through. Really annoying. Because at times I guess it's 440, was getting skipped or something.
And they were in there all the time, so I was able to put the PL tone on and say, that's the one I don't want to hear.
Yeah, clearly not. Clearly, clearly not, yeah. That's pretty cool. So, I'm not much of a scanner, but I have a scanner or two, but frankly, most of the scanners I have more functions on them than I would know what to do with. Most of them were given to me later in their life. I think I actually have one that will do trunking. I'll be damned if I know how to set it up. But that's okay. I mean, I'll get around to it. You know, you've seen those around to it. But anyway. But it's pretty cool. Charging the last of my batteries for the weekend. So that way on Sunday, if we need to throw somebody into a vehicle, I can hand them a handy-talky, a mag mount, and a 5-watt radio mag mount, and a seal lead acid the size of, your foot, and basically send them off any vehicle that might be around that they're going to use for SAG. So that's going to be fun. And our favorite baritone, NS2K, is going to be our net control, so that's a really good thing.
I'm not sure I can get up at 7 o'clock in the morning, though. I may have to stay up all night just to be up there. I don't know what's going on Sunday here. I didn't check my... Well, let's see. There's a track meet in Old Bridge. I am definitely not going to that. Maybe I'll show up.
Well, that would be great. That'd be great, there's a lot of fun, and I'm going to endeavor this time to bring a load of donuts. If I get out the door in time, if I can roll out by 6 o'clock, then I'll be there before 7, and with a couple of dozen donuts. I think that's always a good thing. And they eventually have coffee there, but I have to work on that, too. Maybe I'll buy a box of Joe just to get people going.
Ask Starbucks if they'll donate it. They often do that for events.
Yeah, I'm sure they do, but this isn't my event to run. I help coordinate the communications and the logistics and the SAGs. Those are the basic functions, and of course my son drags in some EMS people, which is great. So we have on-site EMS at the start, finish. And actually, he's not going to be with the EMS crew. He's going to SAG this year. EMS crew really doesn't need in this event in particular, they do not need a radio liaison. In the August event, it's probably better to have one, but, we can set one on SPEN 4, which is also... I forget what's the medical. It's there. It's the fourth channel for the medical team too. The EMS crowd. It's kind of a mutual aid, interoperability channel. I can't remember what it's called, but anyway. We can set up a radio for that as well.
Yeah, the State Police Emergency Net. That's very useful channel, from what I've heard. All right, anyway, I won't keep you longer. You're making me tired with all your yawning. But then again, I start waking up at 10 o'clock at night. W2TTT from W2JC.
Yeah, well, you're like in a state of permanent retirement, so God bless you. On the other hand, my first alarm goes off at 6 a.m., in order to get Jeremy out the door for school. And he's out the door usually around 6:45 with the carpool, so that's the good news. Although one day this week, Tuesday I drove. So that kind of set the tone for the week, to say the least. But anyway, at 10:15 it would be nice to call it a day here. This is fun, but I really should probably call it a day, so I'm going to. 7-3, always good chatting, and maybe we'll see you Sunday morning at Dark 30. It's an all 2-meter operation. 7-3. WGJC, WTTTT.